Support for Soul and Ice, the podcast, is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Big news, my friend. Manscaped just released their new cologne scent to help you feel good and smell good all over and at all times. Who knew smelling this good could feel this good as well? Manscaped is trusted by over 2 million men worldwide. Join the movement for all your below-the-waist grooming needs. Everyone knows Manscaped has the perfect package 3.0 for all your below-the-waist grooming needs, but they didn't stop there. Complete your grooming game with the new refined cologne signature scent by Manscaped. With the same signature scent that's in all the Manscaped formulas, this cologne is a perfect complement to the collection. Light, approachable, and gentlemanly in all the right ways. This is it. Think of it as your wingman for the night to keep you fresh and ready for just about anything. Calming and inviting, this signature scent introduces a light citrus burst before settling in to a masculine finish. This 50 ml spray cologne is even cruelty-free, dye-free, and 100% vegan. They've got a beautiful design glass bottle that makes a statement, and the manly scent is attractive to set the mood. Also, be sure to check out the Perfect Package 3.0 with all the essentials for your below-the-waist grooming needs, including the Lawnmower 3.0 trimmer and crop formulations. Yes, I'm talking about deodorant and toner to keep your... Well, you know what I'm talking about. Keep them nice. And now you can use the new Manscaped Refined Cologne to complete the scent and smell great anytime, anywhere. It's time to feel sexy, my friends. Get 20% off and free shipping with the promo code SOUL. That's S-O-U-L at manscaped.com. Your boys below and your body will thank you. Now let's start the show.
Nice.
Soul on ice. I'ma put my soul on ice.
Nice.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, or good night, whenever or wherever you are listening. Thank you so much for joining us. You are now rocking with the best. As always, big shout out to our man, Brother B, holding it down, the minister of social information, always hooking us up on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. He's killing it out there. So do us a favor. Make sure you hit us up there. Also subscribe, rate, and review. We need that love. We got to grow this podcast and just make it something that it started out really sweet. And now we're trying to get it like, you know, like some cake. You know, we're trying to grow this thing. We're trying to make it something sweet that you can taste every week whenever you come on to this podcast. My name is Kwame, and on today's show, our first show for Black History Month, we've got some heavy hitters coming in, Darren Banks and Peter Worrell. These guys lit it up back in the days, the 90s, the late 90s, early 2000s. If you were on their team, you wanted to be their best friend because these guys were the guys that were going to protect you on the ice. That's coming up in just a little while. But first, as always, I got to introduce you to the nephews. Well, one of them isn't here right now, but I got my nephew, Elijah Roberts, in the house, holding it down. What's going on, Elijah? How's your week been? How are you?
Well, I'm back in Toronto now, a couple weeks in the classes. So things have been good. Just been getting started, getting back into the routine of school.
Okay. Okay. That sounds good. Akil is going to join us for our interview with Darren and Big Pete. But, you know, before we get to that, P.O. Joseph, we got to give that young man from the Pittsburgh Penguins a huge shout out. 3-point night this past Saturday, Pens versus Rangers. The kid is on fire. What does this team do? Has he put himself in a position, Elijah, where they have no choice to keep him up with the big boys, or is he still trying to find his way, trying to prove his point why he should be with the big club?
Well, here's my thing with that. I mean, you see it a lot in the NHL. You see 18, 19-year-old, 20-year-old forwards playing pretty soon, but it usually takes a little bit longer for defensemen to get that step in the door. But I think for Pittsburgh right now, I don't know how many years left you have with Crosby, Malkin, Letang, that kind of core group they have there. So he's gone in. He's played real well right away. He's kept it simple. It's been really good for a young defenseman. So I think right now, while you have those guys there, I think you keep him up with the team. He's shown he could play. He's and who else would you rather learn from than Crosby, Malkin, Letang?
Yeah.
I think he's ready. You can tell he's put on a little bit of weight. He's been working hard. Maybe he listened to my top five, and that's why he's playing with all this confidence. But
maybe
I think he looks good. I think he's ready.
You know what he reminds me of? If you remember when PK got the call up to Montreal Canadiens, and he came in there and he showed everybody what he got, what he had, and the rest is history. So I think he's smart. He's very, very responsible as a defenseman, and having a 3-point night, you know, being put out there on the 3-on-3 in overtime with Crosby, like, come on, that's got to tell me that doesn't take a little bit of poise to be able to do something like that, to be out there with Crosby in overtime.
You kidding me? You know the amount of pressure there is with that?
Yeah.
And on a Pittsburgh team that a lot of people are like, are they done? Do they have anything left in the tank? Do they have what it takes to win? A lot of people say that's the hardest division this year. So good props to him for showing up.
You had some shout outs you wanted to give to a couple of players that are doing some great things right now.
Yeah. One was Mikayla Grant-Mentis.
Mm.
Believe she's leading the league in points right now. She's like family to me. My best friend, who I've known since I was like 4 or 5 years old, that's his cousin. And, you know, that entire family, along with Giovanni Smith and all those guys, they've just become family to me. And she's one of those people who, like, this isn't a surprise. She's been dominating for years at school. Mm-hmm. I don't know how she's never got the call for Team Canada, because she's an
incredible
stud. And,
incredible.
And, She's doing big things, and she's got a bright future ahead.
The Mentis family, and I have to do a little bit more digging. I actually met one of her family members in Nova Scotia. They have history.
Who's the family member?
I can't remember his name, honestly.
Chicky.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
How do you know Chicky?
That's her dad.
Mm-hmm. No. I have met Chicky. But there's another member of his family in Nova Scotia. I met him in Nova Scotia. When I was doing the film, I interviewed a guy, and his last name was Mantis. I just can't. I'm an old man, so I'm forgetting the name right now. But her family has roots going back to like the Colored Hockey League of the Maritimes. That's how deep her family is. So. Yeah. Hockey is in her blood, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else you want to give a shout out to?
Keandre Miller. He's been like PO, young defense. He's doing really well. The one thing that kind of bothered me, though, is like when players score their first goal, you always see the picture, win, loss, regardless if they lost 10-1. You always see the picture of them with the puck after the game. Did you see the picture of Keandre?
I didn't.
There's no picture.
Yeah,
which is I don't know the whole situation there. I don't want to talk on that. And maybe they did take a picture and it get posted. But are you kidding me? How is there not a picture that's all over the place with that guy scoring his first goal with the puck?
Yeah, it's interesting. But you know, New York is going through it right now. They're going through it right now, to say the least. Mm-hmm. So yeah. But, you know, congratulations to the young man. We've got to get him on the show. We've got to get him on the show for sure. And you know, P.O. Joseph, he's you know, killing it for the Pittsburgh Penguins. And speaking of the Penguins, they have some great things happening for Black History Month. I'll fill you in as much as possible. This Friday, February 5th, 12:30 p.m. Eastern, join them for a conversation with two-time Stanley Cup champion Trevor Daley, friend of the show, recently named Pittsburgh Penguins Hockey Operations Advisor. They'll be talking about the power of representation in the sport of hockey on and off the ice. to be a part of this conversation, sign up on their Penguins official website. We'll also throw up a link on the podcast description for you. And yeah, it's going to be a great conversation. Elijah, speaking of great conversations, Super Bowl weekend is coming up. What are your thoughts?
Well, I got a lot of thoughts on it, to be honest. I think it's going to be a pretty good showdown. The one thing I've realized, and I think a lot of people could agree, that you can't bet against Tom Brady. I've learned my lesson with that. Once the year that the Falcons were up 28-3, I bet on the Falcons to win. And I said to myself, I will never bet against Tom Brady again. I'm either going with Tom Brady or I'm not going to pick a team at all. So I think it's going to be pretty cool. I'm taking the Bucks to win it. I think it'll be close, but they're the first team ever to host a Super Bowl. And I think when you just have the greatest player to ever play on your side, I think you got to roll with that. But it's pretty interesting because usually this time of the year, you're with your team. In the OHL, at least, you're getting close to playoffs during that final month. But this is always one time where you're, unless you have a game the next day or a game, even if you have a game that day after the game, usually the coach gives you a little bit of leeway to have a Super Bowl party or have everybody over to go and watch. So it kind of sucks that this year you can't really do that and have a Super Bowl party. It's usually one of the most fun nights of the year. But yeah, it's kind of sucks that you can't do that.
Well, you know what? There's always next year. So, you know, enjoy it in the comfort of your home. Be safe and have fun, you know, just watch and have fun. Trash talk on Twitter or something. I don't know.
I did want to say, because, you know, I'm usually here with my picks and you guys kind of refer to me as a sports guy.
Yeah, you are.
I think the Bucs are going to win, like I said. But I'm saying this from now. Tom Brady's going to have over 300 passing yards.
Holy smokes.
And 3 touchdown passes.
Holy smokes. Really? So the Bucs calling it like that.
Calling it like that.
All right. Well, we'll have to see how that goes down. But have fun watching Super Bowl. Just be safe, my peoples. You know, the COVID, it's not going to last forever. And this is not the last Super Bowl, okay? So enjoy it at the comfort of your home and trash talk online. And hopefully next year we'll be back to being able to have Super Bowl parties or go to the Super Bowl if you got it like that. All right, Elijah, I'm pretty excited about our next two guests. These big men have been holding it down, so let's get to it. All right, today we are joined by two men that held it down in the game of hockey from the late 1990s to the early 2000s. Let's start with our first brother. He played for about 15 years professionally with a couple of runs with the Boston Bruins in the mid-90s. In addition to his playing career on the ice, he played professional roller hockey for the Roller Hockey International League, scoring 21 points in 17 games for the Anaheim Bullfrogs. He's an IHL Turner Cup champion. And for the last time I actually seen him, he was the big man on campus working as an executive in a casino as a host in Viva Las Vegas at the D Casino. Soul brothers and soul sisters, let me introduce you to the one and only Darren Banks. What's going on, brother man?
Hey, glad to have me. Glad to see these other guys. I haven't seen Pete in a long, long, long time. So this should be a lot of fun.
So speaking of Pete, joining us with Big Bad Banks, our next guest hails from Quebec, Ontario, Canada, but spends his time now in sunny Florida. He played 10 years professionally, drafted to the Florida Panthers in the 7th round, 166th overall in the 1995 draft. After his playing career, he started coaching and is currently working for the Florida Panthers. Soul brothers and soul sisters, let me introduce you to Peter Warrell. What's going on, Big Pete?
Yep, yep, King. Good to be here. Glad to see everybody. Glad to talk to everybody. Darren,
you're the first guy from Quebec, Ontario, Canada that I've met.
I don't know where that is.
Yeah. Okay, I said that wrong, didn't I? I got that
I'm
wrong.
I'm glad you caught that. I'm a Montreal kid. I'm a pure Quebec kid, but I did straddle the border when I played at Hull. But yeah, no, It's okay.
Okay, so we've started off on a geographical bad note. Being a Canadian, I should have had that right. My apologies.
It just shows a young man are paying attention.
There you go. That's true. Fellas, thank you for joining us. Welcome to the podcast. How's life been during this pandemic?
Yeah, no, it's obviously it's a tough time for everyone. I think everybody's dealing with different stuff down here in Florida. You know, our situation, I guess, is a little bit different than I think in Canada. We're fairly wide open. We've been playing games throughout the year. We've been tournaments throughout the year, obviously with a lot of restrictions. But it certainly has not been easy. Every team down here, every player down here has had to deal with COVID, and it's just been a challenging year, to say the least, but we're trying to make the most of it. You know, and like I said, at the end of the day, the best part for us is that our kids have been able to play.
Yeah. Darren, how about you, bro?
Well, it was a little slow when it first happened, and everything shut down for 3 months. You know, no one really did anything, but we were fortunate. We reopened in June, and it's not normal, but it, you know, 25%, sometimes it looks like it's normal, but except for everybody's got a mask on, you got to wear a mask everywhere. But I mean, I can still go golfing. I can still play hockey. You can still go for dinner. You just got to make reservations. It's a little slow. It's a lot slower during the week. Mm. Weekends pick up, and obviously, you know, Super Bowl around the corner, March Madness, those weekends are big, big, big weekends in Vegas. So it's slower, but I'm fortunate. Our three casinos are all on Fremont, and you can go in and out of them pretty easily. So, but this mask thing, and I feel bad for my family back home and stuff like that. They can't do anything right now.
Darren, where did you grow up? Did your parents suggest hockey to you, or did you pick it up somewhere else?
No, I grew up in Windsor, Ontario, where my mom and dad still live there. Mother introduced me to hockey, and I could skate at a really young age, but I didn't play hockey until I was 7. So, neighbors, people in the area seeing me skating is kind of how I got into hockey.
Mm. How about you, Pete?
My father put me and my brother. My father had moved to Hamilton, like in the early or mid 60s. Him and my mom, and he fell in love with Montreal Canadiens at that time. When we came back to Canada, you know, in the late 70s, he just kind of threw me and my brother in, you know, wholeheartedly. You know, it's probably the best way to try to find friends and families, in Canada. So we just kind of played. My brother, played up until, I guess, contact hockey happened. We are polar opposites. I think he topped out at about 5'8", 5'9". So as soon as it got physical, he was out of it. And, when it got physical, that's when I, enjoyed it even more. So,
does that sound familiar? Me and Lies, or what?
Yeah, it does sound a little familiar between the two.
There you go. Absolutely. So, I mean, it was, it's what made me feel more Canadian every day. And I thank God that, my dad, you know, felt, you know, a Bajan who fell in love with hockey in the 60s.
Yeah. Did you guys think about playing any other sport, or was hockey the end all to be all?
For me, I played every sport growing up. You know, the popular ones and the non-popular ones, right? So, like, I played soccer for a long time. I was a pretty good soccer player. As I got older, they, you know, put me in nets. You know, I was actually a really good goaltender. You know, I played football. Always wanted to play safety or running back. They always wanted to put me in the O-line. I was like, dead that. Played basketball most of my life. You know, being a Canadian at the time, I'm at 6'6", they put you at center. I didn't really see much future there. And honestly, I was on swim teams. I was a really good water polo player. There was a sport I was playing.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. There wasn't a sport out there I wouldn't play. I mean, Pete mentioned soccer, and I used to goof around with soccer, but all the young Italian kids were, Macedonian kids were playing, and I didn't like the way they played. They didn't play physical, so I kind of got out of soccer. But I played a lot of baseball. I was probably a better baseball player than hockey player. It got boring to me. You know, I love going up the bat, but going out in the outfield, and because I was a fast runner, I hated standing around. So I kind of got out of that, and that's when I just kind of focused on hockey when I was probably about 15.
Pete, you were drafted. Darren, you went the collegiate route, kind of similar to Akil and I. At Brock, what did you study, and how did you find going to school and playing hockey?
It was actually pretty easy. I went to Bowling Green first and got kicked off the team. So the next year I went to Brock University and I took sociology. I ended up getting a major in sociology. I don't know how I did it, but I only went 3 years and I kind of goofed around a lot. But hockey in school was kind of easy for me. It wasn't a hard thing to do. And you only played on the weekends. Very rarely would you have a game during the week. So it was kind of easy for me.
You can't just tell us you got kicked off a team without telling us why you got kicked off the team. Give us the story, bro. Well,
most people know Jerry York. And the very first day I met Jerry York, he did not like me. And I didn't care too much for him. So we stepped up on the wrong foot. And Ian Duncan, I think at the time, was the captain of the team. And I played a little bit of junior, and I played in Dixie. I played all over Toronto. And I kind of a physical player when I was 16, 17, 18 years old. And he thought he could, you know, bully me around, and I wasn't going to take it. And he was like, you can't touch our captain. I go, I'm sorry, your captain will never touch me like that. So we're on the wrong foot right away. Then I played club hockey, and I shattered kids' wrists by slashing them, and I got kicked off of that. So it was like the next year I was like, I still want to go to school and get my schooling. And then I went to school, and then after I went my first year, I had already gone to trial for an IHL team in Flint. And I couldn't believe how many kids went in and out, like just a revolving door. You know, I didn't expect that. I'd never seen that. Didn't know what that meant. So I went back to school for two more years. And then by the third year, I was just like, I had enough of school. And a lot of no-sayers, you know, you're never going to make it to the NHL. And that was what really, really pushed me as a young kid.
How was your experience at Brock off the ice?
It was good. I mean, we had a lot of fun. The school wasn't that big, so it was kind of like a large, large high school, like a really big high school. It wasn't like going to, you know, Western or some of those bigger Canadian schools. I mean, it's a bigger school now, but I had a lot of fun there. I was kind of a bit of a ploy myself. I had a lot of fun in college.
Elijah and I, we played in Niagara together for a few years, so we spent a lot of time. Well, we lived in St. Catharines, so we're pretty familiar with the area. What were the bars you guys went to there? You might not remember.
Oh, bar downtown St. Catharines. I can't remember. Then I go to Niagara Falls. I would get mixed up with some of the NHL guys because I knew them because they were from my hometown or whatever. So I'd go over to Buffalo, maybe go to Toronto. It was the local bar downtown St. Catharines. I can't remember the names of them. In Port Dalhousie, I think was the other name of another area we used to go to.
Okay. So you played professional roll hockey while you played professional ice hockey, assuming that was in the off season. Talk to us a little bit about that opportunity and how it came and how you enjoyed it.
Yeah, I actually played with some guys and they were like, hey, you know, we played roller hockey in the summer. I'm like, I'd rollerbladed, but I'd never seen it. So they're like, you know, you just come up to California. And what got me was they're like, we have a golf membership. We can golf as much as we want. Well, I love the golf, so I was like, I'm in. This is a good way to stay in shape. And I didn't realize how hard it would be. Like, I couldn't stop when I first got out there, and they used to laugh. You know, I'd go almost through the boards because I didn't know how to stop, and no one showed me. But it was fun, but it was a great way to stay in shape until I went to play hockey for the first time, you know, get ready for the hockey season, and I couldn't skate. It was the weirdest thing. I put my ice skates on, and I couldn't move my feet, and it was just so different. And then it took me, like, literally I felt like I'd never skated before. And then 15 minutes later or so, I was able to get back in the groove again.
You're talking about the differences. What are the differences that you liked and that you disliked?
Well, the stopping, that was the biggest difference because it took so much longer to to stop, but you could coast out there and you just, and you'd still be moving, you know, just kind of shuffle your feet type of thing. And you were still moving. And then I played in Anaheim. So my first game, I think there was 14,000 fans in the stadium. Like, it was unbelievable how many people were there. So, and then we, you know, Anaheim, you played to LA. It was all, you know, the West Coast type of thing. And we flew Southwest. So it was like, I was getting more air miles. And it was just a fun thing for me to do. And, you know, I lived with two buddies that lived below me. I lived above them by myself, but it was, you know, had my own car that they gave me. And it was just like, I was constantly getting paid where, you know, in hockey, if you don't make a lot, in the beginning of my career in 1989, I made 27.5 and thinking I was a rich guy because I didn't make anything before. Right. So in college and, you know, spending that 27,000, that didn't last very long. So making money in the summertime was kind of fun.
Pete, you were drafted late. Did you think you were going to be drafted? And paint the picture of that day for us. Where were you? Who you were with, you know, the day of, and you know, once you heard your name, you know, what that mean for you and your family?
I wasn't sure I was going to get drafted at all. I was rated, they go in the fifth round. That was before goalies and European players. So I was kind of on the cusp. The draft that year was in Edmonton. And I just didn't feel that I had the funds to fly down to Edmonton just to sit in the stands and cheer for other people. Right. So, I didn't bother even going. One of my best friends, who was draft eligible that year, Jason Doy, was ready to go in the first round. He ended up going the second round in Winnipeg. But like I told him, like, you know, if you hear my name, like, just give me a call. Let me know. Like, I'd like to celebrate if I get drafted. And I ended up going to a Mexican restaurant in the west side of Montreal. It was myself, PJ Stock and his brother, and a couple other guys that we all grew up with. We were all playing major junior at the time, who we were all kind of in that same boat of whether we get drafted or not. And, you know, we spent the whole night there at that restaurant, Chi-Chi's restaurant, and none of us got a phone call. So we were obviously disappointed. Happy hour, but a little less disappointed. Went home, you know. So, I went home that night thinking nothing happened. About 6 o'clock the next morning, my dad walked in my room and was like, son, read the paper. I was like, oh, great. Yeah, awesome. And I went back to sleep and woke up about 10 o'clock. And I was like, man, I kind of dreamt. Like, my dad walked in my room. I, you know, went back to his room. I was like, dad, what's up? He's like, Pete, you got drafted. I was like, what? He's like, yeah, you're Florida Panthers. So I poured through the paper, saw my name. I was like, what? How is this possible? And about 11 o'clock, I finally got a phone call from Florida. And I guess they had the wrong number. So they kept calling some little old lady who thought they were, she was pranking or getting pranked and like was literally angry, like cussing them out and everything. And then finally somebody decided to call my junior coach. It was like, yeah, it's 056. Like, what are you doing? So it wasn't really until the next day that I actually even had a conversation. And I was on a plane within 2 days down to South Florida for the first time. And, you know, it was the culmination of a dream and it was really exciting. But I mean, I knew there was still a whole lot of work to do. I mean, I was playing about 5 minutes a game in junior. So, I mean, I knew I had a lot of work to do if I wanted to stay in Florida, which, you know, I'm a Caribbean kid. I like the weather.
So you grew up in Quebec, which is apparently in Ontario.
Settle down.
We moved west.
You started your professional career in Florida, of course. Was it weird going to the rink with flip-flops on?
Yeah, at first, but like it didn't take long to get used to it. I mean, it was, you know, when I got there, it was, look, we were an expansion team, but we were really good. Right. So, I mean, they'd gone to the finals the year I got drafted. They were a playoff team the following year. We, you know, that third year we made the trade for Burrett. So, I mean, it was a really exciting time to be there. It was a lot of fun. And, Like I said, like waking up and not having to shovel snow, waking up not having to warm the car up to get to the rink, and to, you know, wear flip-flops and shorts, it didn't take very long to get used to. But for me personally, it made me really want to work hard because I didn't want to leave it. You know, I mean, once you get that, and especially if there's some success in that, you know, you want to stay there. Like the thought of getting traded out of there to, you know, Winnipeg was not really appealing to me at that time.
Darren, you were pretty much a journeyman throughout your career. Did you ever feel overly frustrated about that? Because it seemed like every year you were going from team to team, city to city.
Believe it or not, I wasn't frustrated because I'm about the one guy that was like getting traded. It was like, oh, going to a new city? Never really been there. Get to experience it. So it didn't bother me. The 1 year was like five teams. It was insane. So it was like you just kept moving and moving and moving. I was okay with it. I wasn't married. I had no kids. So it wasn't hard to move. And I make friends pretty easily. And obviously, most guys in your team usually want to make friends with the tough guy in our team. So, you know, we're the one protecting them every night. And so it wasn't hard to make friends on new teams. But, you know, I moved around a lot. And it's kind of weird. I mean, out of my career, I've got three teams I played at least 2 years for, two or three years. Two of them played 3 years. And I ended up with 16 teams, which was insane. But it was fun, and I met a lot of great people. So it was a lot of good times.
And you had two runs with the Boston Bruins. How was your time there with the team and being in that city?
Being in the city, believe it or not, I thought it was going to be real racist, but it wasn't, at least not towards me. And if it was behind my back and I never heard it. They really got right behind. It was like the fans, everybody in Boston got behind the hockey team. But I was unfortunate. I went to the wrong team at the wrong time, and they were all worried about how much money can they save. This guy's on a one-way, this guy's on a two-way. He's on a two-way, we send him back. And then the 1 year I played, every other game that Cam Neely didn't play because he couldn't play back-to-back games. So I would play six games in a week, which was insane because I was just going back and forth, back and forth. Mm. And no matter how well I played, I was going back. Mm. So, you know, finally I got to the point where, like, I'm going to play 150 games this year and be beat up, and I can't be fighting in the American League and then go up to the NHL and expect the same thing out of me. So, you know, we didn't demand a trade, but we told them either you keep them up or send me down. And I went down on the weekend, supposed to come back on Monday, separated my shoulder on Saturday, out 6 weeks, came back, played two games, separated my left shoulder. Like, it was just one injury after another, and then me fighting with the coach. And it was an ugly scene, and then I kind of just got blackballed. I couldn't get back to the league.
Blackballed. You know, blackball is usually one of those things where, you know, it's unwritten rule, or you don't, you know, you can't really prove it. What made you feel like you were being blackballed at that time?
Well, after that year, you go from playing in the NHL to I can't find a job anywhere, not American League, not the I, not the N, nowhere. Mm. And it seemed like I was doing everything by myself. My agent wasn't really helping. And I just couldn't get a job anywhere. And it was insane, like playing probably the best hockey I was ever playing, doing everything they wanted, scoring 10, 12, 15 goals a year, getting 300 minutes a year, and I couldn't find a job. So I kind of know what happened. So I just made the best of it that year. That 95 year, I played all over the place. And then finally I hooked up with the Vipers. And then when I got there, I didn't want to leave there. Like, it was like playing in the NHL. We had it better than most NHL teams. We had our own plane. Like, so we were flying everywhere. We were treated really well. And by then and our teams were really good. So when you only have 17 losses in a season, it's not hard to come to the rink and not worry about not being in the NHL. And hey, if we get another shot at it, great. But by then, I didn't care anymore.
But, you know, what's really interesting is when you say, you know, I kind of know what happened, but, and then you just move on. Bro, you can't tease us like that over here. You know what I mean? You got to give us the skimmy, man.
Well, so Michael Connell is the coach. He ends up becoming, so he's a coach in Providence, mm-hmm. and he and I are fighting. I mean, literally almost fist fights on the ice. where he's like, get off the ice. And I'm like, you're not getting me off the ice. I'm staying out here and practicing. And I shot a puck at him one day in practice from the other end of the rink and hit him in the knee. Like, and he's trying to get me off the ice. And I'm like, it's not going to happen. You know, and it just, it was ugly. And, you know, and like I said, I'd do anything for my teammates, anything to win, but I couldn't put up with a coach who was trying to bullet, you know, just push me around. And I did everything he wanted. And it, so the next year, he's the assistant GM in Boston. So I can't get a job there. And now, of course, that word's going to travel throughout the league. This guy's a bad apple.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So, and then I was fortunate with when I got to with the Vipers, Steve Wozniak and Rick Dudley, who everybody knows, still do the game, I think, pulled me in Detroit, and they loved me there. They let me do what I wanted, and I played, you know, I think the first year I had 16 goals, 300 minutes, and we won a Turner Cup that first year. So things went well after that.
Yep. I'm thinking that if you shoot a puck at your coach's knee, that's probably going to get you pretty much blackballed.
Yeah, and they're trying to get me off, and I'm like, no.
So I think the hockey world is pretty small. And you played for a lot of different teams. You just mentioned Steve Ludzik. Elijah and I know his son. He was our goalie coach in Niagara. You mentioned playing for, you know, the Detroit Vipers. My dad played for that team. You started at Brock. Elijah played in that city. Played in Fort Wayne. My uncle played in Fort Wayne and is settled there. You played in Jacksonville. And I lived in Jacksonville for like 3 years. What was your favorite spot?
Vegas, believe it or not. I mean, all the glitz and glamour that happens here. But playing in Boston was kind of – it was kind of iconic, you know. You know, the Celtics there and the Red Sox living in it, and the fans are just, they're sports fans. They know their players. They know, you know, the Patriots. They love their sports. And it was unbelievable. Everywhere you went, people knew who you were. It didn't matter what sport. You could have played soccer and they would have knew you.
You said Vegas there, and it kind of, when I was looking you up and seeing what you do for a job and saw you've had lots of different teammates, played for lots of different teams, but I kind of want to know, out of everyone you've encountered through your job as a host in Vegas, who's the most interesting person you've encountered?
Oh, every week it's something different. But, you know, from NFL football players that are playing right now to Dave Schultz, so we all know who he is. Just fun people. Daryl Sittler, who was like a hockey hero to me as a kid. And I didn't have a favorite team. I wasn't a Toronto Maple Leaf or Detroit or Montreal. I like players, and Daryl Sittler, I mean, I remember wanting to score the 10 goals like he, or 10 points like he had. You know, I just liked the way he played. I met him 2 years ago for the first time ever, and he was just amazing.
Switching up a little bit, you guys played during a time when there were few players of color visibly in pro hockey. Guys were spread out around the leagues, and also, the discussion of minorities in the game of hockey was nothing compared to what you see and hear today. What are your thoughts on how the game is changing? And also, what did you guys think about the fact that not many Black people were involved in the game of hockey?
I mean, first things first, I mean, it's super exciting, you know, seeing, you know, how many more guys are getting in the league and not only just getting in the league and playing well and playing in so many different roles. I think there was, you know, I think Darren could say, like, you know, when we broke in the league, there was pretty much one role that most Black players played. They were either the tough guy or they were the goalie. You know, there wasn't really much room. Obviously, you had the Jeromes that came off and the Ansons that came through it later, but you kind of got pigeonholed. So, I mean, to see how many different ways guys are able to play the game today, you know, whether they're, you know, Seth Jones, you know, playing that rangy, you know, defensive game to, you know, some guys on this call who are Canadian heroes. I mean, there's so many things that are exciting to see from the young guys. And not only just the way they play, but, you know, the activism that they have, you know, like how they're not, you know, just staying in the background and just being wallflowers. You know, they're stepping up and letting their voices be heard. And I think that's something that's very important. And probably one of the only things that I look back and wish that I had done a little bit more of. You know, when I broke in league, yeah, I mean, there was, you know, a handful of guys. maybe two handfuls of guys. You know, growing up, you know, I could count the guys, you know, the Pokey Reddicks and the Grand Fures. And, you know, every time you'd see somebody, when Darren first popped up, and it was like, oh, somebody like me, you know. So, I mean, it was exciting. And it was, you know, it was almost like catching a leprechaun, right? Where today they can just be players. There's not as much of they still stand out. They're still very important into, you know, the growth of the game. But I from the outside looking in, it feels like they can just be players a lot more and be themselves a lot more. You know, when I got in the league, like touching the radio, that was never going to happen, you know? So it was a lot of country, a lot of heavy metal and a lot of me in the corner with headphones. Right. So, I mean, it's, you know, the world's different, it's changing, it's gotten better. And it's, I'm excited for them. You know, I really do. Like, I enjoy watching them play and doing the things that they're doing that are promoting this game.
What are your thoughts on that, Darren? How about you and your experience coming up?
Yeah, well, again, like Pete, when I came in the league, even before I got in the league, the only black players I knew were Tony McKechnie and Grant Fuhr. Like, they were the only guys. And then Willie O'Ree, I didn't really hear about him. Like, I didn't hear about Willie until probably in the mid-90s before I even heard about the guy. But, you know, like I said, there was only a handful, and I concur with Pete. I mean, we had certain roles, it seemed like, and, you know, finally guys like Anson came in, and I'm glad guys like PK are in the league, and he's very outspoken, and he's done a lot of things. And, you know, when I seen that he got traded out of Montreal, the only reason I think he got traded out of there because he was getting bigger than the Montreal Canadiens, and Montreal Canadiens aren't going to allow that, you know. They have a hard time if you're not French. Now you're a black guy playing in Montreal, and very outspoken, and everybody knows who you are. And I love these, you know, Seth Jones. I can't think of a guy. Every guy I see nowadays is some kind of star on his team. And when I don't know who he is, there's a young man on Detroit right now who I have no idea who he is. But I like to know who these guys are. And I hope that back in their day when they were playing, they heard of us, or if they didn't know of us. But I'm glad a lot of them are goal scorers, really good players. And the Thomas kids and, you know, World Juniors last year, I thought that was awesome. You know, scored the game winner. I was the happiest guy in the world, you know, not just because I'm Canadian. So I'm glad it's a little easier for them. I mean, I don't know how many often they heard the word nigger, but I guarantee they did hear it. And, you know, when I heard it, it was a little different because I beat your head in. And it wasn't hard to get back at you. They can't do that anymore. You know, they barely check anymore, let alone fight. So I'm glad that these kids are in the league and they're playing, and more youth are starting to play and they're getting the opportunity. And I think now as hockey's got so expensive, for a good kid, you know, a really good hockey player playing in travel hockey, I mean, it's expensive. They're $10,000, $13,000, $14,000 for kids to play hockey. If my parents would have to pay that, I wouldn't have played.
Right. You know, Darren, not much has been written about you as far as any racial incidents on the ice. You know, I'm pretty sure that's because you were probably a guy that they knew they didn't want to touch for some particular reasons. You know, but for the situations that have happened to you, how did you deal with them, and what were some of the lessons that you would pass on to the young kids that are playing right now that may be going through some sort of adversity in that sense?
Yeah, I think because the player that I was, I didn't hear it. I would hear it from the fans more than anything. And they were easy to deal with. And my biggest thing I used to say to most fans that I could hear screaming at me, and on the ice, you don't really hear them, but going off the ice, you'd hear it. And I would just say, where do you work? I'll come and watch you work. I'll pay to watch you work tomorrow like you're doing today. You know, and that would usually shut the intelligent fan up. I mean, most of them are pretty ignorant for being acting like that, but it wasn't that hard for me. I would hear it. And again, I could react. And I probably did some dumb things on the ice because I might have reacted, you know, without thinking. And I'm hoping, you know, the league's pretty hard on them now, I think. if they even hear you calling somebody a name, I think the league cracks down on them pretty quickly.
Pete, I think growing up watching and reading about hockey, when it comes to racial situations, it's your career that, you know, I was always reading about, or, you know, about something. In 2018, you wrote a really great piece that was really brave, in my opinion. You spoke about some of the worst times in your hockey career. And, you know, you were playing in the Q, which is the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. Take us back to that situation in, I think it was Beauport, Quebec?
Yeah, Beauport, yeah.
Beauport.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was my rookie year. We were in the first round of playoffs. You know, like as I said, I wasn't a guy that rookie year that played a lot, right? Like, I always get that joke that I played with Jose Theodore. He was our goalie that year. And he'll tell you every day, like, you know, he outscored me that year. So, I mean, I wasn't a guy that was going to be out there that was going to, you know, have a huge effect on the game, right? So, we're playing a game, first game of playoffs against a team that was, you know, predicted to beat us pretty handily. And I didn't get a shift to the game. Yet throughout the whole game, right across from our bench, you know, that brave soul with a megaphone, grown man going after a 16-year-old kid, you know, spent the whole night, you know, telling me to go back to Africa, call me a monkey, call me every name under the sun. At one point, you know, he thought he was super humorous and clever when he yelled at our coach and told him that he had 19 yellows and a nigger. I was like, okay, cool. Like to see you outside. But, you know, it was really tough, you know, and it was really frustrating. You know, I already had enough emotions going into it. And, you know, it was, you know, just trying to keep your composure and trying to be the good teammate was really tough. But I say it to this day, like I was very fortunate. The teammates that I had, the character of the guys that were on that team, who at every moment were reassuring me like we got you, you know, we're with you. This is nonsense, and you know, we know who you are, and we know what kind of person you are. Mm. The coaching staff, Claude Julien and Bob Mongadin, Bob was the head coach at the time, who, you know, would keep coming by and you know, just keep patting me on the back and saying, don't. You know, don't fall for it. We love you. We love you. We know how special you are. You know, when we got back to Hull and Charlie Henry, our GM, who you know, was, you know, guiding figure for all of us, you know, basically said the same thing, you know, and really got me back into, you know, the proper focus of it. And, you know, kept me from doing something that was really stupid, you know. So I'm always grateful for that. But I also, you know, I also know that I got the last laugh from that. We lost that game that night. And then we won the next four and won the Quebec League. So thank you for being an idiot. It motivated my team. And it probably got me drafted and started my career. So thanks.
Yeah.
26 years later, have you had an apology or any encounter with that guy?
No. Honestly, like, I think most of the people that would do that are cowards. So I don't really think that if they ever had the opportunity to walk up to you face to face to either continue their taunts or to even apologize for it, I don't give them enough credit to think that they would actually do that.
Would that mean anything to you if he did, or is it to the point where there's just so much nasty things said?
Honestly, I think it would depend on the sincerity of it. You know, just saying, I'm sorry that, you know, you felt bad about it 26 years ago. I take that out the door. Like, that doesn't mean nothing. If you didn't learn anything from it, if you didn't feel that you did anything wrong from it, what's your apology do for me? I'm a grown man now. I don't care. You know, I'm in a role now to, you know, help, you know, A, my family, my kids. But, you know, in the programs that I'm with and mentoring young men and young men of color, young men of the majority, to be better, you know, to be better in terms of racial discrimination, be better in terms of how they treat people of different genders, how they treat people, you know, the gays, lesbians, all those people. I mean, just be a good person, you know, and that's all I care about, you know. So rehashing, you know, somebody's fake apology from all those years ago, I moved on. I moved on. We're good.
So there's one suspension where a player who's now a coach in the NHL called you a monkey in a game and was received a one-game suspension. Were you shocked to see the league kind of barely hold him accountable? And, you know, like, what do you think would happen if that kind of happened in today's game?
I'd actually say the and maybe Darren can speak of that as well. I'd actually think the other way around. The fact that they even suspended him at the time was actually progress, to be honest with you. And that, you know, that story sometimes gets lost of the bigger picture of what happened there, right? And, you know, that player made a terrible comment. And he immediately understood what he did wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And he immediately after the game, without any provocation, without anybody, you know, prodding him to or pushing him towards it, made his way over to the dressing room to apologize profuse, like sincere. And he backed his words. Like it was never anything that ever would even cross his lips. You know, I think sometimes, you know, you have to be willing to understand that people can be stupid and make mistakes. And if they're willing to have some contrition, you know, to allow them to, you know, have their humanity as well. And in that instance, you know, he fall through and did the right things. If he had ever done it again, I probably jam his teeth down his throat, but it wasn't something like that. And again, like I defend him to this day from in that instance that, you know, he stood up as a human being, you know, understood the dignity of another human being and wanted to, you know, make sure that, you know, that I understood that, you know, he actually backed me and wanted me to do well and felt terrible, that he took a moment of joy. I mean, it was my second NHL game that happened, you know, take my moment of joy for me, you know, you know, he promised to never do it again. And in the years since, I've not heard anything that of him being in that way, you know. And I think most players that played for him, you know, all the way to his cup run, you know, they speak nothing good things about him.
So, you know, quick little story here. I was roommates with a guy for this like Team Canada event, and he was asking me a bunch of questions about like, has anyone called you this or anything like that? I'm just like, yeah, like whatever. I told him a story how this kid kind of just told me to go play basketball. And then it just kind of got like, I could tell he got a kind of weird. And he was like, yeah, like to be honest, I was asking because that was actually me. And like, I'm sorry. Like, so it was like, it was crazy because I'm like, well, I guess we're roommates for the week, like, boys, I guess. But I kind of felt that feeling of like, at least he kind of like, he wanted to like face it and own up to it and kind of apologize and made me feel like way better with him, like super cool with him to this day. And like, I just find when people actually own up for, you know, bad stuff like that they do, like, I think that's, you know, what everyone kind of needs to kind of try to do. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think if we just cancel everybody for one instance, or I think, you know, we're just all canceling each other out and it's not going to really bridge that divide. I think when somebody who makes that mistake or makes a mistake of that nature, who can sincerely want to try to bridge that gap, and fix things, I think we need to allow them that space and that opportunity to try to make the world a better place. Why do we have to hate? Why do we have to be so angry with each other? I mean, off the ice. I mean, on the ice, yeah, I hate everybody. But, you know, I mean, off the ice, like walking down the street, I want everybody to be peaceful, everybody to be to, you know, want everybody to do good. I think that's how, as a society, we get better.
Darren, on that note, you know, hearing all that and, you know, knowing that situation and seeing what's going on right now and, you know, knowing that there's a lot of young kids that are listening to the podcast right now, how would you, you know, how would you add on to that message and what other messages would you have for the young minority kids that are playing in the game today and that might be having a tough time?
Well, the biggest thing for young kids now is to go out there and improve. You want to improve every day that you step on the ice, and it doesn't matter what color you are, but if you feel that your color is hindering you or stopping you from doing something, then get better. You have got to get better. And I mean, the best players are the ones that are going to play. And as you can see now in the NHL, or I don't care if it's hockey or basketball or whatever sport it is, the best players play. And they don't care what color you are. The only color they see is green, you know. So go out there, work your butt off. If you think you're not a really good skater, work on your skating. If you think you're not a good shooter, work on your shooting. You've got to work on those things in your game to make yourself better. It'll make you a better person, you know, and enjoy yourself. This is a game. This is not life. This is a game, and go out there and enjoy it. It's a business when you get a little older, when they start paying you. It's a business, and you got to understand it's a business. These guys, they will trade you. You're just a commodity. It don't matter who you are. Go out there and work hard, and it becomes a job. And then go out there and work hard. But you don't get nothing if you don't work hard. I mean, talent can get you a lot of things, but talent can get you thrown into the trash. So go out there and work hard.
You know, because you guys are the OGs in this, why has it been so difficult for older Black players to speak about what they went through compared to the young guys that are playing in the game today? You know, Pete kind of spoke about his admiration for some of the kids that are really speaking out, but what do you think was the catalyst between your generation and this new generation about speaking out?
To be honest with you, I think back in our day, I think we'd have been outcasts. You know, if you would have started speaking up and, you know, raising your shoulders and being proud who you are, I think they would have stepped on us. I think they would have stepped on us really hard. It's taken time. It's taken time for change. And I mean, we're seeing it with all this political stuff that's going on in this country here, and in, not so much in Canada, but here in the United States. Black people are starting to stand up for themselves. And you know, they're getting a little retaliatory from it. But back in our day, if you would have stood up, somehow they would have beat you down. And beating you down would have been, I'm sorry, but I'm going to send him to the minors. Now you're in the American League. Yeah, I don't think he's working out here really well because you're talking too much, right? Now it's kind of freedom of speech. And I think the first guy that starts running is, you know, talking now, and they're not going to send him down. They'd be fools to send him down. So, you know, they have the platform to use it, and I say use it, and they are. They're standing up and they're saying what they think and how they feel and their actions. You know, like in the bubble when I think it was PK's brother and
Matt Dumba
they made that stand. That was a big thing, especially when they're whining in football about guys kneeling on the ground and not understanding the reason why Kaepernick did it. You know. Now they're sitting back going, oh, you know, what he did wasn't just injustice. And people didn't know it, you know, and now they know it. And I was glad those hockey guys did that at the beginning of the bubble. I was really proud of them.
Both of you guys are some heavy hitters, somebody that I probably wouldn't want to drop the gloves with. Who's the toughest guy that both of you fought? And I know it's got to be all love, but Akil and I talk all the time, and we know if Akil and I drop the gloves, wouldn't end very well for
Akil. That's easy.
So if you two were to drop the gloves, how would that go?
Pete?
I mean, part of what my thought process every fight was I was going to win. So it doesn't mean that I was or not. That's just how I went into every fight. I was cocky. I didn't get through it. So I mean, I'm always going to bet on myself. But I do, you know, I realize how tough Darren was. So I mean, I prefer not to do that. I prefer, you know, let's go have a beer before the game or the after. Excuse me. I meant the night before.
Right. Who's the toughest guy you matched up with on the ice?
Honestly, there was, I think both of us would talk about it when we played. I mean, there was a lot of killers when we played. You know, I started junior with Big George Larac. So, I mean, we probably had more fights than anybody. And, you know, George was super strong. Luckily, he was a really nice guy. So you never really want to hurt anybody, which was A-okay with me. You know, probably like the only guy that I was ever, I don't want to say scared of, but my knees shook a little bit. My first goal, I scored, you know, first shift of the game, was all pumped, came out for my second shift, lined up at a face off, and all I heard was "let's go." And I looked over and it was Tony Twist. And I was like, "Oh geez, this is not going to be fun." So puck dropped and, you know, I threw a quick five piece, like pop, 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 pop. Mm. And I just held on for like, and he just swung me around for about a minute. And I've never experienced this in my life before or after. This man with just like a twist of his wrist just made my whole body crumple.
Really?
On my knees, and he was cocked, ready to throw one. And I looked up and I was like, well, it's been a good 22 years. You know, I accomplished a lot. And for whatever reason, he held off. So I was like, woo. And we got to that penalty box and he was like, "Man, you, good job, young man." I'm like, "Thanks. You got some long arms." I'm like, "Yep." And I go gadgeted him as far as I possibly could. There was no way I was letting you punch me. I have seen what you've done to people. No. So yeah, Tony Twist was for me, the one that really scared me. Obviously, you know, you fighting the Proberts and all those guys, and everybody was tough, but there was an allure about Tony at the time, that he would just, you know, crack guys' helmets in half. Like you just didn't want to get punched by him.
What about you, D?
You know, it's funny that you just said Tony Twist, and you're not going to believe it. I have the same guy. This is my first year pro. I'm in the minors playing against him, and he's picking on a guy on our team. And it's kind of, and I jump into it, and I don't realize it's him. And then when I realize it's him, I'm like, uh-oh. I'm like, I already know who he is. And I'm like, well, I'm here. Like, let's go, you know? So we went at it, and that was Friday night. And the next day, Saturday, we're playing him back to back. That's how it was in the eye. And we went again. And this time I got the upper hand on him. And I mean, I was strong with everything I had. And he always knew with him because he turned his head before he threw a punch. So when he was turning towards me, I just pushed him away and he couldn't reach me really. So we beat each other. I mean, we literally beat each other. And he went off to the little box. I went to the box, you know, nothing really hurts. You know, you're in there. And I'm in like, God, I got to ice my hand. My hand's killing me. And come back out in the third period, and he jumps on the ice and he goes, "Let's go again." And he kicked the right winger off the ice, which was the funniest thing ever. He goes, "Get off," in front of their bench, and their coach just shrugged his shoulders. So I was like, all right. So I backed up to drop my gloves, and he goes, "Banksy, wait till the puck gets dropped so we don't get suspended," which I thought was cool, right? So I was like, all right, he's, you know. So now this third fight, we go at it, and I mean, it's a war. I don't know if I'm hitting him. All of a sudden, I'm seeing blood everywhere, and I don't know if I'm bleeding, he's bleeding. Go off the ice, and I'm like, I must be cut. Go inside, there's not a mark on me, nothing. I'm like, must be him. I look at my hands. I got cuts on my hands, but no big deal. I'm not like the blood was flying around. So, you know, back in the day, both teams would go to the same bar. He doesn't show up. I don't think nothing of him. I'm like, oh, well, whatever. He didn't come. They went to Kansas City. This is the beginning of the season. They went to Kansas City. We came the following weekend. Kansas City had never played us. And I'm skating around a warm-up, and Greg Craigwell's on the other team. He looks at me and goes, "Banksy, what happened last weekend?" I'm like, "What are you talking about?" Tony Twist couldn't play either game. His eyes were completely shut.
Wow.
I was like, now I'm the big man on campus because the whole team in Kansas City doesn't know. I was sneaking around like I was 7 feet tall out there.
That's but yeah, awesome.
He was tough. And he got in a penalty box, and it felt like getting lumps on top of your head.
Wow.
Like a cartoon character. That's what it felt like. It was just like, this guy was trying to kill me.
Wow. You know, guys, again, you know, we're going to get out of here in just a little while. And I thank you guys so much for coming on our show. This is Black History Month, 2021. You know, what do you guys, when you guys think about Black hockey history, what's some of the things that come through your mind and some of the things that, you know, our audience needs to remember about the past, the present, and the future? Pete, we'll start with you.
I mean, that's a good question. I mean, you know, I think just looking at the guys that have done it before and how tough they had it and how every generation's had it a little easier. I know Darren was talking earlier about, like, you know, he didn't really know about Willie until later in life. You know, I was in high school and I was fortunate enough, you know, my grade 7 year, I think we created a Black history course. And, you know, I remember my first project was on Willie O'Ree, you know, you know, and how much pride it, you know, for me to see, you know, the very first, you know, didn't know about him until then, didn't know that he was like a year after Jackie Robinson, that didn't know that he was blind in one eye, like just all the things I learned at that time, like, just really felt special. You know, and then, you know, you turn on the TV that day and it was, you know, late 80s, early 90s, and you see Grant Fuhr out there doing his thing. You know, seeing guys like Freddie Brathwaite, you know, as a Bajan, as a Brathwaite myself, and finding out that we were family, you know, that was so super cool. And, you know, for me growing up, I always played with Jason Doig, you know, Jamaican. Got to the NHL and started with Kevin Weeks, who, you know, another Bajan. So, I mean, I was always fairly lucky in that aspect. But as I said, like, seeing how the game's progressed and seeing how many more players are in the league, how many more players are right on the cusp of the league, how many more players there are in youth hockey, and how, you know, they get to be players, you know. They're getting to live the dream that I think that a lot of us wanted to live, where it wasn't that we were Black hockey players, we were hockey players who happened to be Black, you know, you know, I think that day's, if it's not here, it's getting closer. And, you know, it's just something that we just got to keep pushing and striving for you know, get in there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, again, Willie O'Ree, I didn't know about him until later on. So Grant Fuhr and Tony McKechnie are the first Black guys I ever see play. And then myself to play. And I got that. I never played against Peter, but I seen him play a lot. And I knew a lot of guys playing. He said he was a great guy. So, you know, I'm glad we're getting to meet each other this way. But the kids that are in the league, and I'm glad that they're, you know, again, they're standing up for themselves. And they're going out there and playing. And it almost gets past the point where he's a Black hockey player, that he's just number two, P.K. Subban, or whatever number you are. But and the other thing, I was really excited that 1 year when I think there was five Black guys in Atlanta. Like, that was unheard of. See, five guys. I played with Kevin Weeks, you know. I played with Pokey Redick. So it's nice to see that more and more Black players are getting to play. They're getting the opportunity. And the youth programs, I hope they, in these inner cities or, you know, wherever they are, Toronto, Philly, Detroit, wherever you're at, they more kids get the opportunity, more Hispanic kids get to play. You know, like, I'd like to see more kids of color, of any color, get out there and play all sports, but especially hockey. That is my love, and I mean, I still watch it to this day. So, again, I hope, you know, they can keep speaking up and letting other people understand, because there's still a lot of kids that really don't understand what it's like for a Black kid to be playing hockey with all white kids. And I mean, I didn't grow up with any Black kids in my neighborhood. I didn't play hockey with any Black kids until I got older. So it was different in the way, you know, someone might look at you, but again, I didn't hear it. It was kind of kept away from me. It was more from the fans than it was from players on the ice. And I think players did do it because of the position I played. So,
yeah. You know, Atlanta had five Black players in 2005, but 20 years ago, exactly, Edmonton Oilers was the first team to have five Black players. Joaquin Page, Sean Brown, those guys, George LaRock, Anson Carter, and Mike Greer. That was actually a really interesting time for the game of hockey. And, you know, hopefully one day that can happen again, you know, with Akil on his team right now, there is the possibility to have three black players, four black players, right, Akil?
Possibility to have four, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that would be interesting. Listen, before we get out of here, boys, we do this thing. It is the top five bangers. Now, Peter mentioned that back in his day, he was not ever able to grab the aux. But back then it was probably the CD player. So if you had the chance to go back and control the five songs that would be played in the locker room before a game, Pete, what would be your five songs?
It's easy for me because that's what I listen to. The first one was Brand Nubians, Punks Jump Up, They Get Beat Down.
There you go.
Number two was DMX, Rough Riders Anthem.
Okay.
Just gritty. Just got me angry. Got me hype. I throw a little Biggie, Juicy. That was always my joint. I'd come back with a little anger again with Hit 'Em Up, and then I smoothed it out. I actually see the album right there, so it was a Wu-Tang member. Raekwon the Chef, Ice Cream.
There you go. I love that. That's a dope top five. Elijah, please write that one down. Big Banks, what about you, man? What would be your five songs?
I'm sorry, but I don't remember. I know certain songs. I don't know who sings them.
Okay.
But I'm sorry, but my guy is Michael Jackson. I love Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd be the only guy in the dressing room dancing to Michael Jackson. I loved him. But believe it or not, Quad City DJ. I had that song pumping in the Turner Cup final after every single win. I mean, I had the whole team singing that crap. They didn't even know the words, but it was awesome. But yeah, I'm a music guy, but I don't know who's singing them.
Okay. That's Quad City DJs. Come on, Ride the Train. I know that's a banger right there. That'd get everybody hyped for sure. And a little Michael Jackson, but Can't Steer You Wrong. But we'll hold it down with Big Pete's top five. Elijah, you got anything you want to add in before we let these guys get out of here?
I know that's a Kwame approved top five, but honestly, I rock with kind of, I know three of those songs, but I rock with all three of them. And, you know, this is a history lesson for Akil. You don't know anything about old hip hop, old rap. So
that's it.
I approve. And I'm a big Michael Jackson fan too. So
that's it.
Fellas, like Michael Jackson.
Yes. But fellas, listen, man, you know, this is Black History Month and we wanted to start off with the big men on campus, the big men on the ice. So thank you so much for joining us on this show. Banksy, Pete, good luck, man. Cause I know you're trying to do that thing behind the bench. How's that going before we go? How's it going behind the bench?
Yeah, it's coming along. I mean, again, it's year by year, just being willing to do whatever it takes. And, you know, we've had some good years, had some bad years, but just going to keep pushing and hopefully get to where I want to go.
One day you're going to see Peter Worrell behind the bench. I guarantee it, people. Make sure you watch out for this. You watch out. And if you're ever in Vegas, go down to the D, ask for the big bad Bank. He got you. Banksy's got you for sure.
You call me before you come. I'll take care of the weekend.
There you go. Trust me. He will take care of the weekend. Listen, fellas, thank you so much for rocking with the best. We appreciate your time, man. And I can't wait to see you guys again in your respective cities.
Thank you. Salute.
Hey guys.
Salute.
Thank you, guys.
All right. That was Darren Banks and Peter Worrell, two of the biggest men who played some strong roles back in the late 90s, early 2000s. Just for our listeners, Akil had to jump off. He had to go get his mouth guard fixed up. He had to get it sized. So he had to take it.
Looking like me.
He didn't want to, he wants to keep them pearly whites together. But Elijah is still here with us. Elijah, what did you think about talking to those? Did you know about those guys back in, like, growing up? Or is this the first time you're really even hearing about them and knowing about them?
I've heard a little bit about Peter, but really haven't, like, I don't really know about either of them. But they're pretty interesting to talk to. Like, when I was kind of looking them up, I typed Peter's name in, I saw the first thing I saw was like his fight against Chara and him fighting like George LaRocque and a few tough guys. And I was like, wow, this guy's a real deal. And then same with Darren. And then I found that the fact that he went to Brock was pretty interesting. He's kind of been on that same path that I'm on right now. So it's pretty cool guys to talk to.
Yeah. Well, listen, this is our start of Black History Month for our shows. Next week is going to be sweet. It's going to be good. I don't want to give too much. I just want to say, you got to listen. It's going to be something that you're going to really, really appreciate. Other than that, Elijah, they had some great top fives. I know you are going to enjoy listening to those. And, you know, we just keep people going to our Spotify Soul on Ice hype songs. And you'll see all the lists of all the songs that our guests have listened to. Make sure you hit us up on social media. Our social media is on Flago right now. Brother B is killing it right now. Okay. He's had some pretty sick posts going on our Instagram page and our Twitter page. So if you haven't already, do us a favor, make sure you add us there and retweet, give us a shout out, say what's up, DM us, like holla at your boy. We'd love to hear from you guys. We got to do a little bit more of that, Elijah. We got to interact with the people a little bit more. It'd be great to find out what the people want to know. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I guess we can say that right now. I want to see people on Twitter, Instagram, whatever it is, either tweeting or messaging us. Let us know what you want us to talk about, any specific questions. We'll have an update on the score of the NHL game between me and Kwame pretty soon. But if you want to know what teams maybe that we should use.
Oh, buddy. Man, I got the PS5 set up, bro. I'm getting ready there. Brother B has got his. Besides us playing each other, we need to set up our EASHL team, and we need to just start getting busy on people out there.
First off, I got to see if you're worthy of being on the same EASHL team as me.
Okay.
I don't like to lose.
Okay. Okay. And I like that. What position do you play?
I'm not just going to play with you for the sake of playing with you.
Okay.
You got to go out there and get some dubs. So unless I see.
Okay. So I got to try out.
You got to try out.
Okay. Okay. What position do you play?
I play all positions.
No, I'm saying, okay. So if you were playing EASHL, what position would you take? Cause I play left wing. That's me.
I play center, but it depends on what the team needs. If I got to go in net, I can go in net.
All right.
If they need someone to hold it down on defense, I can hold it down.
Okay. Okay, we're going to have tryouts this week, bro. We'll update everybody next week or when we get back here, okay? So thank you very much for joining the show. For Elijah Roberts, for Akil Thomas, my name is Kwame. We out. Bong bong.
And when we make it, we going to put our soul on ice. Because when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the poop is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need you. You need me, I need you, like you need me. We double up when our numbers come through the TV. Yeah, soul on ice, I'ma put my soul on ice.
Nice. You goddamn right, I'm screaming on that beat. I got a match screaming on the streets. We in the club, stadium, and the arena, cousin. Put me on ice and I'm hitting that top. G's a dozen, fussing, fighting with myself is enticing. My enemies in the mirror, and he's always reciting the poetry of my power, statistic of my weakness. Shadow boxing with Tyson, I'm trying to show y'all I'm beating them to the punch. Competition on the table, it's time for lunch. Though my mission is unstable, I'm scoring once, twice, three times, and I'm taking hats. Men lie, women lie, progress is based upon the facts. So let that baby shine. They sold a show and older, they live within the grind. Now take them out that stroller, cause coming up is a champ. Prediction of Ali, he changed his name to Muhammad. We changing free to a fee, it's up to me. And when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. Cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the poop is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need you, like you need me. I need you, like you need me. We double up when our numbers come through the TV. Soul on ice, I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice.
Let's dedicate this one to Jaden Linda.
Let's escalate to Caddy, crush the Pinto. Or maybe you prefer that Benz. Why? That big truck, I don't give a f***. Only really want a house with a gift. Let's take it far down on the competition. Competition is nonsense, it's me and my soul's decision. Yeah, I only work against myself. I play against you to bench you. I'm throwing all shots to the shelf. Yeah, the top is the topic. You checking your armor. My wheel telescopic, so I'm steering my karma. The future is mine, like receiving the past from Jesus or Jordan or Crosby, Stills and Nash. Young, and when we make it, we gon' put our soul on ice. Cause when they doubted us, we did it twice. I guess the proof is in the freezer. They tried to get rid of us, but they need us. So I need you, like you need me. I need you, like you need me. When our numbers come through the TV, soul on ice. I'ma put my soul on ice. Nice. Nice.